We're here with Ingrid Newkirk, co-founder of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, who has just published a brand new book entitled 250 Things You Can Do to Make Your Cat Adore You. Welcome, Ingrid. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks, Jackie. My absolute pleasure.
Well, let's talk a bit about your book. Why did you decide to write a book about cats?
Well, in a way it was a vacation, because what I deal with at People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals is mostly gruesome stuff, slaughterhouses, laboratories, what happens to animals in the entertainment industry, like the elephants in the circus. And it's hard to say anything amusing, but with cats, they always bring a smile to your face. But there was a serious reason that I wrote this book, even though I've tried to keep it lighthearted, and I've certainly worked a few funny bits into it. And that was, I was staying with people who loved their cat, but they hadn't noticed what was obvious to me, and that is that the cat had a kidney complaint that was troubling him greatly. And the people had put this down to an idiosyncrasy with the cat, the fact that the cat liked to drink a lot of water. And they had sort of dismissed the fact that the cat's coat had become rangy and dry to the fact that he was aging. But coming in from the outside, and unfortunately this isn't that unusual, coming in from the outside, it was very clear instantly to me that the cat was in desperate need of veterinary help. And so it was a bit awkward. I had a word with them and nicely, and the cat went off to the vet and was diagnosed successfully. But I thought, things like that happen all the time. And they happen in families where people love their animals. And over 25 years or so, I've put together and personally experienced so many things with cats. Wouldn't it be great to put it all in a book? So I wrote 250 Things You Can Do to Make Your Cat Adore You.
Now, to the experience that you discuss in your book between stewardship and ownership, and I think it relates a lot to the issue of whether people can tell whether their cats are sick or not, for instance. What is your opinion about how humans and animals should relate?
Well, I say in the book that ownership is a term really that better describes the relationship that you have with your stereo than the relationship you have with your cat. To your cat, you should be a friend, a companion, a patron, somebody who is a guardian, and there should be a symbiotic relationship, an understanding of mutual love and respect. You will do wonderful things for this cat and look after him or her in a human-dominated world, and they will give you their gratitude, appreciation, their love, and their respect in return. But you must have your eyes open to their needs. A cat should not be just an accoutrement to your lifestyle, not some thing that you think you want because it suits you. It's a two-way street, and you must always remember that.
You know, a lot of people like to pass on the rumor that PETA is against having pets, and I hear this all the time. Can you clarify PETA's position on pets?
Well, I suppose there's some truth to it, which is perhaps one of the reasons it survives, is that we are dead set against pet shops, puppy mills, these places that churn animals out and sell them, make a profit from passing them out to anybody, and there's just no requirement at all. Put the credit down on, card down on the counter, and off you go with this animal, as if it is a possession. Can be acquired so quickly without any thought for the long term, any thought for the needs of the animal. We're absolutely against that, and I don't agree with this business. It's quite titillating to have a new exotic pet, a hedgehog or a chinchilla, or to take prairie dogs now. That breaks my heart. These animals live in big colonies. They communicate with each other in fascinating ways. They have their own lives, and yet they're being sold into the pet trade. So this idea of pet keeping is all very demeaning, and I think that's where this criticism comes from of us saying, oh, we're against people keeping pets. We are in that way, but we're also all in favor of people taking these wonderful animals who, through no fault of their own, have ended up cast off from human society. They're sitting on death row at the pounds, at the shelters. They have no option. And they didn't ask for this to happen to them. They are the losers in this sort of game of Russian roulette. And they need to have good homes. So if you can provide homes for these animals, instead of making more animals, creating pets, then have a respectful companionship relationship with the ones society has deemed surplus and unneeded.
Right. Well, once you have your beloved cat, then why shouldn't you have him or her declawed?
Oh, it's a terrible thing, this declawing business. I hate the name, too. It's such a misnomer. People think of it as a benign little procedure. Oh, we'll just declaw the cat. And actually, it's like taking a hatchet to a hangnail. It's illegal in certain countries. It's certainly a huge procedure just to do to one claw, because it's not just taking off the nail. It's taking off that whole first phalange, the whole digit. So out come the tendons, the muscles, and that can affect the animal's gait, how they walk, their sense of balance. It can actually lead to leg and back pain later in life. And there is no doubt that to some cats, it is very, very disturbing. I know a cat who spent the rest of her life on top of a refrigerator because she was afraid to come down because she thought she'd be presumably predated upon, because she had lost her defenses. You can so easily do things. I show a little diagram in the book where you can cut the cat's nails. You don't need a special veterinary degree to do it, as long as you have a steady hand. Take that little hook off. And it's that hook that is responsible for pulling the threads out of a curtain or the couch. And you should provide things for your cat to sharpen his or her claws on, because that is natural. They need to do that, that whole stretching, unwinding, flexing, and blunting of the claws is a part of a cat's life. And you can get a stump from the forest, get the bugs out of it, leave it outside for a few days, or get a commercial cat post, or make a commercial cat post, and easy as pie.
Yeah, the one in this house seems to like this rug real well. She doesn't, neither of my cats seem to go for the posts particularly. They like to stretch out on the floor and do it to the rug, so luckily we didn't care too much about the rug. I want to talk to you a bit, too, about pet theft. What are the general reasons why a cat would be stolen?
Well, unfortunately, there are quite a few. There still are these people called bunchers in the trade, and these are middlemen for the laboratories, for the research dealers, and it is just a fact of life that they can get money for cats. They have their sources, and they will go around a neighborhood, and you will see signs up sometimes where several cats have gone missing the same week or the same day in a neighborhood. In fact, in some cities, there have been major stories in the newspapers because a whole neighborhood will have been cleaned out. And there'll be sightings of a man with a van, but it doesn't do you any good. It's too late. So, yes, the dissection table. There have been two recent scandals with cats being rounded up for dissection. And they need the bodies because as long as the teachers aren't saying, let's use alternatives, which they should be saying. And as long as the kids aren't insisting on alternatives to dead cats, the cats have to come from somewhere. Also, today, terrible things do happen with juveniles doing unsavory things, these wannabe Satanists, or just sadistic acts to show their power. And we know that people who tend to wish to be violent, not to be downtrodden, can learn that through the use of cats. Cats are very vulnerable. And of course, cars. Big traffic is a big problem. And when cats disappear, it can be that somebody hit the cat and the cat crawled off to die. Also, storm systems. You know, these sewage drain systems. When I worked for the Humane Society, we had many stories of the rains coming and a cat who was mousing down a storm drain suddenly swept away and couldn't keep up with the water. So I say don't let your cat out. Just really don't, unless you have a harness and you walk with your cat in a protected place. Otherwise, make your home a cat's castle and learn to really interact with your cat at home. Let your cat look out, but not go out unattended.
You mentioned in your book that the public has a right to visit animal laboratories to look for a lost pet. Is that really true? I didn't think anybody was ever allowed in there for any reason.
No, you can. It's a strange thing, but the federal law does allow you, if you are looking for a lost animal, to go in and have a look. You have to insist upon it. You have to show sometimes the section of the law to your local sheriff. You have to be usually accompanied by the sheriff, but you can insist. Now, the catch-22 here is that most people who steal cats for laboratory experiments sell them for out-of-state use. But, you know, that said, have a look. And I advocate tattooing your cat. It has happened that some people have retrieved their cats and dogs that way. Obviously, there are unscrupulous people in laboratories, as in any other area of life, who may not call if they see a tattoo. But a collar is easily thrown away, and a tattoo is not. So there may be some decent soul who calls if your cat is very visibly tattooed along the inner thigh.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think I read somewhere, and I can't place it right now, that these laboratories, they can see a bunch of cats and dogs with collars on them. They just rip the collars off. They know they're people's pets, and they couldn't care less about it. It's just you can't really depend on them to be ethical in any way, it seems to me.
That's absolutely true. And, of course, we have run into several cases. There was one noteworthy or two noteworthy ones here in California of people actually answering the Free to Good Homes ads, bringing the children so it looked like a family, and taking the cat away with promises of love and lifetime care, only to discover much later, when these people were busted in two of the cases, who knows how many others are out there, that they were dealing for laboratories and those cats were destined for the lab slab.
Mm-hmm. Well, say you can't keep a cat. What should you do then?
I give a rather large chapter, actually, on the responsibility to find a good permanent home. I hate to say so, but I must conclude that if you absolutely can't keep the cat and you cannot satisfy these guidelines, then the least you can do is steel yourself and go to the best-run animal shelter with the strictest adoption requirements in your area. Because you may be able to sleep nights thinking, oh, I've passed the cat on. But if you think about it, say your cat has another 16 years or 12 years of life. If you haven't done a good job finding that perfect home, then who knows where that cat is going to end up because you didn't take the time. So always look at the people carefully. Get formal identification. Never pass the cat on instantly. Give yourself time. Don't be embarrassed or pressured into passing your cat on just because someone says, oh, I'll do all these things. Investigate. Go to the home. That is where some of these situations have come a cropper, where you found out, no, they don't really live there. Or the neighbor is home and says, oh, yes, they have lots of animals coming through here. Look at this person's vet records. It doesn't matter. If they resent it, then they don't understand. Keep going. But see, how many animals have they had? What has become of those animals? And what sort of veterinary care? What sort of living situation? Are they in the military? Are they going to move? Are they students? Are their lives settled? Because this cat depends on you, or this dog, for that matter, depends on you to make sure they're going to be safe forever. And so it is no good to cut a corner just because you don't think it's polite to ask the questions.
Right, or you're in a hurry or something like that. And now I want to ask you, too, about the food that is being sold as commercial cat food right now. It's coming out more and more that this stuff is really poisonous. It's made out of other dead animals. It's really the most disgusting thing I've ever heard about. What should people do then to avoid these commercial cat foods made out of dead animal waste?
Well, I advocate that you cook for your cat. I have a hard time cooking for myself. I'm an eater, not a cook. But I have found it extremely simple to home cook for cats, because often it involves nothing more than just opening a can, mushing up something, and then adding a supplement like Veggie Cat or Veggie Kit. The reason that these supplements are important is they were formulated by ethical vegetarians who had a dilemma, wanting to rescue cats but not wanting to subsidize the meat industry. And so they're great. They're rich in taurine, which is vital for a cat's eyesight, and other minerals and protein and vitamins that cats need. Cats have to be fed just so. The thing is that this commercial muck, truly, in my view, is absolute muck. It is literally and figuratively the bottom of the barrel. If you go to the slaughterhouse, which I am sad to say I have done many times, there are big barrels, and these barrels are marked 4D. And the Ds, the four of them, stand for dead, dying, diseased, and disabled. And that is where the whole bodies of living and dead and dying, as it says, diseased animals are placed and marked unfit for human consumption. And most people don't realize those body bits and those bodies, those carcasses, end up in some of the most high-priced commercial pet food with fancy little names for finicky cats and what have you, and you are paying premium for just sludge, garbage, and the decomposing corpses of animals who were suffering from things like cancerous tumors. Then they load the stuff up with sugar, which exposes cats to more incidence of diabetes. And there you are. When you get these little cancerous or little tumors later on in life of the cat, and you wonder what's going on here, I say look back to what the cat has been fed. So it's worth exploring, giving it a go, to try some of the home cooking recipes in the book.
Well, you were mentioning Veggie Cat, so does that mean that cats can actually be vegetarians? I hear that dogs can be vegetarians, but that cats are hardcore carnivores.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The research is in, and their coats can be shiny, and they can be very happy. It's easier to start them in kittenhood. Some of the adult cats I know do not recognize non-meat food as meat, sadly. But when people say, oh, well, that's unnatural, well, cats do not kill cows in the wild. So eating cows and pigs and horses and what have you, that's unnatural too. So if you can have a healthy diet and have it not support this hideously cruel and unhealthy meat industry, I say go for it, you and your cat.
How and when should you ever punish a cat?
Well, you should never, ever yell at your cat. Your cat is very knowing, very attuned to you. They pay far more attention to you and your moods and your inflections than you do to theirs. And they are quite aware when you're displeased. So all you have to do is shoot them a glance the way they would. But if you must, if you have tried lesser measures without success, you might reduce yourself to a hiss or even a spit, but you should never yell and you should never abuse them physically, just any more than you would a child. No slapping, no nothing like that. It's completely demeaning and it really upsets them at a fundamental level.